Texas right now is in a bit of a dead period for football. So I guess you're going to have to pretend we're football for the next hour as we talk basketball. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston. We're going to go over a pretty confusing week of Texas basketball as they lost to VCU, but then beat Purdue. So we're going to talk about how Texas fans should feel at this point in the season, what's going on with the team, and then I guess we'll hit on Grand Canyon for a little bit afterwards. But before we do all that, we're going to go ahead and do one of our favorite things and pretend you're getting to know us. And this week's going to be a little interesting as we're going to do some rapid-fire questions. It's not going to be as long-winded. I don't know if long-winded, but it's not going to be as long as our last one, which got like 20 minutes. But this one will be, we're going to have like 10, 15 questions. We're just going to go super super fast. So, y'all ready?
Yes.
Oh, let's do it.
All right. First question. Favorite fast food chicken place?
Wait, hang on. Hold on.
Wow. Well, all right. Off to a wonderful start. What's up, Johnny?
Are we both answering at the same time? Like, what's the mechanics here?
I will defer.
Okay,
I will,
Johnny,
go last,
you go first.
Time.
Tim, then me.
Okay.
All right. Favorite fast food chicken place?
Popeyes?
Popeyes.
Chick-fil-A. Favorite television series that has gone on for too long?
Oh, fuck. Tim, answer if you... I'm blanking, so Tim, it's on you.
I'll go.
Family Guy, I guess.
South Park.
Yeah. It's Family Guy is a good one. I'll go with that, sure. Why not?
All right. Favorite woodwind instrument?
A recorder? Is that a woodwind instrument?
With a Barry sax.
I'm going to go with the oboe.
Okay.
If you could choose to have a sexual relationship with any mythical being, which one would it be?
Centaur.
How, Johnny?
Oh.
Yeah, that's... Well, I thought these could be unexpected questions.
Who are the Greek mythology chicks that really had such beautiful voices?
The sirens?
Yeah, the sirens, yep.
All right, sirens. Nymph. That's too easy. No, I'll go with unicorn. If you could... Mm. No, a favorite repeat character on SNL?
Sweaty balls guy? That was a good one. I like that one.
Robert Goulet.
Sean Connery.
Oh, is this supposed to be a host? I was thinking of an actual character.
No. The character Sean Connery.
Oh, from the Jeopardy thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
no,
that was
exactly
good. Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Yeah.
First celebrity crush.
Cindy Crawford.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if that was first, but it was definitely the one I remember the most.
Had to be either Princess Leia or Kelly McGillis from Top Gun.
Amanda Bynes.
Oh, Kelly McGillis is a good one, yeah.
That was from Amanda's show. Thought she was funny. What's your ideal outside temperature?
72.
Oh, man. Okay, I've got two. Either 55 or 90.
Okay.
We got to move on.
Yeah, we have to move on. 75 for me. Paper or plastic?
Paper.
What sound does a seal make?
I'm really tempted to just sing Kissed by a Rose right now.
Oh, that's what I was going to sing too. Otherwise, I love Seal. Like, I could sing any dozens of his songs.
Your favorite Seal noise is probably Heidi Klum orgasming.
I was just going to go.
Oh. Oh, all right. Yeah, that's also good. Yeah, there you go. All right, yeah.
What supply in your house is running low?
Nothing, because I just get back from Target. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Rum for Tim. And bread
whiskey,
for me.
Whiskey, thank you very much.
If you could teleport, where would you go?
Everywhere.
Oh.
You get one.
I only get one? Fuck. Mars.
A tropical island.
Okay. Damn, mine was Mount Everest, but I can't teleport off. Fuck.
Hey, look, I went to Mars. I'm dead, so it's we're not talking return trip here.
This is nice.
True.
Yeah.
I probably got
Just hold my breath for 10 seconds and really appreciate the view before turning doing the whole Total Recall suffocating thing.
It was only dust.
Atlantis, because if I don't teleport, then I know it's not real, but if I do, it is real.
Oh, all right.
Who would you add to Mount Rushmore?
Oh, sheesh.
LeBron?
Yeah.
I know Will's answer
Vince,
is Trump.
Vince, Ricky,
but...
TJ, and Kevin.
Trump would be hilarious. I would just piss off so many people. But I might do that just for shits and giggles. But, I mean, but Teddy Roosevelt's already on there. So, yeah, Trump, why not? Because that's funny. What were you known for in high school?
Wait, hang on. We need to have Trump next to Obama just to make everybody angry.
Ooh, that's a good one.
There
All
you
right,
go. Two,
I like
two,
that.
Yeah. All right.
What are you known for? What were you known for in high school?
Nothing, honestly.
No, there's something.
Oh, no, that's not... Okay, that's not true. I did win a beauty pageant when I was in high school.
Humble brag.
No, you're not getting the explanation. This is rapid fire. Let's move on, Tim. It's yours.
Well, I guess tennis, although the second day that I was at school, we had just moved into town, and a guy named Ryan Graydon... like thought it would be funny to de-pants me, and my undies came down as well. So some females saw the whole thing.
So your enormous dick was what you were famous for?
Yeah, so that was uncomfortable to be known for in a school of about less than 200.
I was known for the nickname Spidey Bays. And
for what?
Spidey Bays. Spidey Bays.
Spidey
Bays. Wow.
What was the craziest thing you've ever done?
Started a podcast with you two.
Wow, Johnny's lived a pretty
Sheesh.
Vanilla life.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we don't have time for the actual answer.
I'll go. Got mugged in my own house.
It's true. Yeah, that is. Yeah.
I got so drunk one time that we were... Now, this is, of course, in Iowa.
Rapid fire, Tim.
I know. Okay, so I got so drunk one time that on the drive home... We were on the interstate, and it was like January, so there's snow everywhere. So I had to pull over, so I'm yakking all over in the ditch, and I kind of lay down in the soft snow and tell my friends, just leave me. Just leave me. I'll be fine. They didn't leave me, but that would have been, for sure, the craziest thing I ever done.
That was super rapid fire, Tim. Say a word in Spanish, Johnny.
bueno.
Enchilada.
Felicidades. All right.
Oh, was that we were wrong, Tim. That was the word he was looking for.
Name one of the seven dwarves.
Dopey.
Damn it.
Sneezy. Herpes.
Grumpy.
Skanky. Speedo.
This is fun.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh! Star Wars.
Star Wars by... Oh, Jesus Christ, Jonathan.
Are small dogs actual dogs?
Technically, yes.
For sure.
No.
Yes. All dogs are bitches. Doesn't matter who they are, what size they are. They're just pussy wolves.
What's your favorite car?
I mean, I really like my C30. It's not like my dream car. I mean, dream car would be like, you know, McLaren or a Bugatti or something like that. But I like my car.
1994 Ford Probe. A lot of fun in that car.
I'm thinking of an old 1960s, 1970s Ford F-150 with the crazy paint jobs of very vibrant colors. I think those are cool cars.
And just the bench seating in those?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Let me find one more. Using an Elmo voice, tell me how you like your coffee.
Black. Like you black.
I don't even know if that was close, honestly.
I've never had a sip of coffee.
This is too weird. With cream. And last question, how do you feel about cranberries?
They're fine in small doses.
One of my favorite alternative bands from the 90s.
Perfect.
That's true.
Perfect
way.
For the holidays. I wish I had.
I've never
I
had
wish
one
I
of those
had these
either.
Answers. I wish I next week I'm gonna have these answers, in written down, and then we're gonna have a What was the question? All right. So let's go ahead and move on. I hope y'all at home were playing along with that and had as much fun as we did. But let's go ahead and move on to the basketball portion of the show, where the theme this week is I'm confused, because last week we were told, I'm going to basically shorten this down a little bit, if they lose to VCU, it's bad, and then they might or might not beat Purdue, and whether or not they win that one shouldn't matter in terms of like being angry. But they lost to VCU in a pretty infuriating way, shooting two threes at the very end when they only needed 1 point, and they beat Purdue in pretty solid fashion. It was a pretty exciting game, and Texas played very well. So let's go ahead and start off with that VCU game, though. What happened to Texas against VCU?
So that game was a tale of whatever cautionary things you want to talk about a Shaka Smart-led Texas program. That game was sort of a microcosm of all the things that we get nervous about. We took too many threes. We struggled in initiating offense where we wanted to go in the middle of the lane. We had long stretches periodically throughout the game where we didn't score. Our highest percentage usage players both either disappeared for the entire game or had really rough stretches where they struggled. Like, it was sort of everything that could go wrong did. Kerwin shot terribly. Dylan had three turnovers in a very crucial, like, 72-second span in the late in the second half. You know, Eli played poorly. It was just one of those games where if it could go wrong, it did go wrong. And I think the confused part is true, because on the one hand, you know, in some respects, I think Jericho probably had his best game there. In that game, Texas's defense was solid as usual, and there were some things that you could say, hey, that was good. On the other hand, it was just infuriating to watch this Texas team make the same stupid reads, the same dumb decisions over and over, and it ended up costing them. You know, I don't think VCU would be a terrible loss at the end of the year. I would be surprised if they dropped much lower than like the 95-110 range. I mean, it won't be a great loss by any stretch, but it won't be damning from like, hey, we can't overcome this. But it was, it certainly was very frustrating to watch them play so poorly and play so unintelligently through a lot of the game.
Yeah, I think the issue, well, an issue with the VCU game is that, and maybe this is why it was the catalyst for so much anger and, you know, disappointment among the Texas fan base, is that it is Shaka's former team, and it is the program that you would hope that of all of them they would beat, just because it's, you know, the optics of it are terrible. I mean, part of it is that they that it came on the heels of two other losses, including the Radford loss. Part of it is just this sort of, you know, where are we going as a program if we're, you know, losing to the teams that, you know, we poached Shaka from, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of sort of, I don't know, there's a lot of kindling for the fire, maybe.
The optics weren't good.
No, the optics definitely were not good. And, you know, regardless of the fact that VCU is not a bad team, I mean, they took number 4 Virginia to the wire a couple days ago. I think it was Saturday or Sunday. Sunday. It was on Sunday, because it was the same day as the Purdue game. I think they were tied with Virginia with like 4-ish minutes left in the game.
They led almost the entire game.
Yeah, they did. And it, you know, Virginia finally put them away at the end. And it was another, you know, another very slow, very methodical, a lot of another rock fight, which is sort of what VCU does well. I spent a lot of that game less diagnosing individual plays and individual problems than I did just sort of being frustrated, because it showcased a lot of the flaws and a lot of the limitations to this particular flavor of Texas offense. The bright side of having an offense that is built upon speed of execution is that you have the athletes to get to a spot first. And you are streamlining the decision matrix. You're simplifying things significantly from what there was last season or any season they did the random ball screen stuff. The downside is that if a team can take away your primary action, you have limited avenues to alleviate that problem. And Texas did not show the capacity to get around the hard hedge, to attack the paint reliably. They just didn't solve the problems that were in front of them very well. And so thematically, that was the problem I left that game with, was just, you know, offensively, they just did not perform. They did not respond to adversity well at all.
And I guess I would go into the micro view a little bit. And to me, what VCU really solidified, sort of cemented on our offensive struggles, was that we had two senior players, one of which has been in the program for 3 years, the other one for 4 years. And both of them showcased in that game almost an inability to attack within the flow of an offense when they're a primary ball handler. It just over and over and over again. Kerwin would, you know, with like 17 seconds or 19 seconds or 14 seconds left in the clock, he would receive a pass or get a handoff at the top of the key or 25 feet or whatever it would be. And then he would survey. And even taking that second or second and a half of hesitation to kind of look and see where we're going to go over and over, VCU had the athletes and the defensive wherewithal to get themselves back into position. So he was having to try to create against a defense that was able to actually recover and get back into their defensive looks. And he never really found that ability to attack inside of a quicker, hey, let's go, you know, let's get the ball and move. And it makes sense for him to sort of survey, unless he's going to shoot this pulley from outside, because if your threat to drive is what helps you to be open from three, or vice versa, your threat from three helps you to be open to drive, you've got to shoot better than he did. And so VC was like, all right, dude, do it over and over. And then Dylan being the same way, just shot faking for the sake of shot faking, and a lot of circumstances where it felt like he was, you know, he would retrieve the ball and then just kind of like, wait, okay, what do I do? Or go into some weird action that didn't make a lot of sense for what he was doing at that moment. And it was, you know, to see those two guys struggle in the ways that they did in a game that they had to know, more so than anyone on the program, that they had to know meant a ton to Shaka, was just like, you know, if we can't even get our guys that should most want to win this kind of game and should most be ready to emotionally bring their A games, that was tough to watch. I think that I would agree. But from a micro standpoint, that was really tough to watch.
Right, but I think the most frustrating part of that game was probably one of the problems I've had with the Shaka Smart tenure, which is times, just long periods of time, where Texas goes without a point. And Texas did that five separate times. They had five separate times where they were 3 minutes without a score. And one of those was towards the end, where for the last 8 minutes of the game, they scored 4 points. VCU was shooting 28% from the field. And I think that for the last 4 minutes, they got one basket.
Yeah, I think it was like the last 2.5 minutes, there was 4 points total or something like that.
Right.
It was each team scored one basket in the last 2.5 minutes. It was not a display of offensive prowess on either side. I mean, I guess you could conversely say it was a great display of defensive prowess. I don't know how much of this is a Shaka-specific thing as it is. This happens in a lot of college basketball games with even competent defenses, much less, you know, upper-level defenses, where teams, you know, there's a reason why most of these guys aren't in the NBA right now. because they don't shoot as well as NBA guys do. They don't cut as well as NBA guys do. So some of this is a, you know, just sort of a level of play thing. Because of that, I don't know how to tease out how much of it is a Shaka specific thing as opposed to just sort of, it's college basketball, man.
So then tell me, how did Texas turn this around within a few days and survive Carson Edwards putting, what was it, something like 40 points?
I think it was 40 at the end, yeah.
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 How do you turn around and survive that type of onslaught?
So I guess the best way to do it is to make sure nobody else contributes. I mean, contest against him as best you can, and then try to limit the effectiveness of everybody else, which is, I mean, I don't know if that's their design or if it's the fact that Purdue lost four big seniors from the previous season and they don't quite have the production they did a year before. So some of it is maybe a little downtick in talent for Purdue. And maybe they're, you know, sort of in that situation like Texas was the Kevin Durant year where they just keep waiting for Superman to come out of the phone booth. And Superman came out, but nobody else helped Superman. You have to give Carson Edwards all the credit in the world because at least a third of those shots were highly contested and or high difficulty shots.
They were
crazy.
And he drained
a ton of them.
They were crazy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like it, other than the... that three he hit with 20 seconds or so left where they decided to go with a 2-3 zone for some inexplicable reason. Other than that shot...
Well, then Eli didn't contest.
Yeah, Eli did. It's not just that Eli didn't contest it. It's that he backed away. It's like he went, well, that guy's too hot. That guy's too hot. I got to stay away. Hot potato.
Throw him in gasoline.
Yeah, exactly. So other than that, I mean... Texas did a pretty good job, especially in the second half, of contesting shots and making them difficult. He was just hitting them. And so at a, you know, a certain point, you got to tip your cap to the guy because he was, I mean, he shows why he's one of the best guards in the nation. Or maybe
he
the
came
best
to play
the
against the team that passed him over.
Well, I mean, yeah, but every fucking team passed him over. Like, he had backup offers from K-State and Texas Tech, but they weren't really going after him. You know, I mean, if Carson Edwards is on a revenge tour, he's got about 100 other schools to go after other than just Texas. So, you know, they contested everybody's threes. And the other guys were not able to hit, but Edwards went off. And that's the reason why this game was close as opposed to, you know, 10-plus point victory.
Yeah, Texas played well enough to make it a pretty kind of lopsided win, honestly. If they had played like that in multiple other games, you know, we would be having a very different conversation right now. To your original point, a little bit from the opposite end of the spectrum then, Will, I would say one of the biggest things that Texas did and you hate to talk about the game against VCU being kind of like a nail in the coffin for any of this stuff, but the biggest takeaway I had for the Purdue game was just the pretty seismic shifts in personnel rotations that we saw for the first time kind of at all. It hadn't even really been all that close previously. Hepa got more minutes than Osikowski. He got, I think Hepa was at 23 and Osikowski was at 17 pretty
something
directly.
Like that, yeah.
I think Hayes got like 26 minutes and Sims got 14. You know, you saw some of this stuff where there was like, all right, we can't put up with this shit anymore. you know, for all of the emotional stability that Shaka brings to the program, this was a game where it's kind of like, look, Dylan, if you can't put this together, we're going to get someone who can move the ball and be every bit the outside shooter you are as well. And so to watch Kamaka in there for those minutes, particularly at crunch time, right? Like, it wasn't just that he was playing big minutes, but he was in there, I think, for like the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game at least too.
Yeah. He's been ascendant for the last couple games. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously to see Hayes play so well in a game where Sims has brought nothing is like, all right, we're just not going to play you. That was to me a pretty big thing for Shaka to do, particularly because in both of those equations, one was a fifth-year senior, the other was a freshman. The other was a sophomore, well, the other was a freshman. So that was an eye-opening thing for me, and hopefully can serve two functions. A, get Hayes and Heppa on the floor as much as you can, because here's two very talented guys, and B, nobody's safe. It doesn't matter what you've done for us or what we thought you would be at the beginning of the season. We're going to make sure we're putting the best guys on the floor. The other things that I thought were big in this game was that this was probably the best I've seen Eli Long play. He's been a little bit of feast or famine throughout the season, and this was certainly feast. He played very well. And then the last piece, which obviously is a little self-serving on my part, I thought it was really telling that when we got into crunch moments all throughout the game, it was Coleman who got that ball late in shot clocks, as opposed to Roach being the guy to be kind of the volume shooter and take over at those in those tougher situations. And so to put the ball in Matt's hand, whereas Kerwin a lot of times would survey, take that second, maybe kind of probe with his dribble, Matt was getting the ball and going. And he was kind of, because he's a little bit more comfortable with the ball in his hands in traffic, he was able to survey as he was moving forward. So he took away a lot of the time the defense had to recover and get back where they needed to be. And it didn't always result in the best shots. But I counted, I think, at least six hockey assists that Coleman had, where even if he wasn't getting credit on the assist itself, he was the guy who passed the first guy open, which then led to the assist, which when he is making defenses recover, that's when he can be really special, of using his quickness, using his vision. And I think Coleman scored 22, Roach scored 10, I think.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, so to kind of to see that shift, was that had to be tough. That had to be a tough moment for Shaka to pull that cord on both Dio and Sims, and a little bit of telling Kerwin, hey, we're going to use you more as a secondary or even tertiary player in some of our offensive sets, and hey, Matt and Kamaka and Jackson, do your thing. So that was, I mean, if we're looking for a positive takeaway from that loss to VCU, that could be it, if we're seeing some of those younger guys who are maybe a touch more solid or a touch more talented get some of those looks.
Yeah, and to that point, I think there were some signs of this in the VCU game, where Heppa got like 11 minutes, you know, and previously he was getting 4 or 5. You've seen over the past few games, Hayes has been getting an increasing number of minutes, to the point at which, whether he's actually the starter or not, he's getting starter's minutes. Like, he's getting the, you know, 60% of the minutes at the five. So you've seen those patterns starting to form, you know, over the last few games, or in Heppa's case, the last two games. But I think your point is very valid in that, about Roach, in that time and time again in this game, Coleman is the one bringing the ball up the court. Coleman is the one initiating the action. He's the one driving the lane, before Roach is. Or if Roach is, he's doing it off of a screen where he's trying to get into some sort of, I don't want to call it necessarily a secondary action, but he's not the initiator. He's part of the action. And I think all of those things sort of coalesced in the Purdue game to show, you know, that each of these guys has their own sort of value, and I think they thrive in certain roles more than others. Like, as much as I understand the desire to get Roach to initiate the action because he is arguably the only person who can create their own shot, he's, like Tim said, he's taking a little too long to survey things at the beginning of the offensive set, whereas Coleman gets into it more quickly and penetrates a little more quickly, and it kind of manifested itself in this improvement offensively, at least in some respects.
Well, and I mean let's not mince words here. If Kerwin's a senior, like, he's been around here long enough to have played a ton of games and understand what this is about. If he plays poorly against VCU and Radford, we win. He didn't play poorly. He played terrible in those games. And I think, you know, I think that any coach that wants to preach the kind of the kind of confidence and commitment that he's going to have to players like Shaka has, there needs to be some kind of accountability. And I don't mean to say like a punitive way of saying, well, fuck you, Kerr, when you lost us those games. He certainly did not. And he's, without him, we don't come close to beating North Carolina, right? So there's a lot of these different things, and certainly his defensive work on Edwards was a big deal, even though Edwards played obviously incredibly well. But it can't happen. It can't happen. We can't lose more of these games. And whether he needed a reset, whether he needed some time to like say, like, all right, here's what we want it to look like. Here's the different ways you can attack. Here's how attacking in this manner can help us. I think it was very informative for me to see that it happened so quickly. Like, okay, three games and then we're done and let's see what happens.
And one thing I would point out is that from everything I understand, no one understands that Snoop sucked the last couple of games more than Snoop. Like he is keenly aware that he did not bring it in the couple games prior to this one. And so he seems open to that sort of change because he's, you know, he is to some extent honest about, you know, his failings. And so I don't, out of all the discussions that you mentioned might've been tough, and I don't necessarily disagree with all of it, I think that was probably the easiest one for Shaka to have, is to talk to Snoop and be like, look, we're trying to put you in a position to succeed. We're trying to put Matt in a position to succeed. So let's do this. I bet you Snoop was the easiest one out of anyone to buy into any of that stuff.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and one thing that I've noticed, at least, and this is pretty obvious, over the past three losses, Texas has had three guards that have not hit over double digits. Well, Michigan State being a little bit of is Dylan Osikowski a guard or whatnot? But against Radford and against VCU, Texas relied on their big men to score them the points. And they had three guards go under double digit in points. Now, when they turned the corner, this Purdue game, you had Matt Coleman for 22, Kerwin Roach for 10, and Elijah Michu-Long for 10 as well. Those 10 points, I mean, that's just enough. The point I'm trying to make is the same one I made last week, which is Texas can't rely on their big men to win them games because the past three games have shown they cannot do that.
So I don't disagree with sort of the larger point. I'm just going to put a caveat on it in that if I was going to modify your statement, I would say I don't think Texas can win with its bigs playing traditional post-up roles because Sims and Hayes and to a lesser extent Osikowski, when they try to do traditional post-up things, it does not work very well. The synergy stats back that up. What I would say is that the bigs can contribute in a more active or more athletic role in, you know, rim running, getting putbacks, being the, you know, rolling hard to the basket in pick and roll situations. So, I don't think it's entirely upon the bigs, I don't think the failings are entirely upon the bigs so much as it is they need to be employed in the right ways. And I think in the Purdue game, in the North Carolina game, you saw them being employed in these ways that sort of maximizes their athleticism, that minimizes their dribbling, their decision making. And I think going forward for Texas to reach sort of where it needs to be, the bigs have a very vital role, but it is a pretty specific role.
I'll dumb that down even more for people. Alley-oops, good. Jump hooks from 10 feet out, bad.
Yeah, jump hooks after four dribbles, bad.
Yes. So then let me go ahead and start this new segment for us, which I'm going to start after infuriating times for Texas fans, which is going to be the Angry Internet Fan segment. That's usually my role on this, so it's really like I'm just going to continue being who I am on this show.
You're turning it up to 11.
But I'm going to turn it up to 11 here. So the first question I have is, bring back Rick Barnes and fire Shaka Smart?
That needs a few exclamation points at the end, I think.
I like it just because it feels like the comments I've been seeing. I like that. It does. It's like sort of question mark, exclamation mark. No. That's the short answer. The long answer is that I am and continue to be one of the biggest Rick Barn fans around. Like, I legitimately enjoyed his tenure at Texas. He seems like a solid dude. I would love to have a beer with that guy at some point. But people are sort of glossing over the fact that he went, was it 3-6 in his last 7 years in the NCAA tournament at Texas? That he, you know, missed the tournament 1 year, that he put in a series of decisions that, or made a series of decisions that ultimately accelerated his demise here, that he was not going to do what he's doing at Tennessee at Texas. Like, he was, you know, part of the sort of roster issues that Shaka inherited are due to the fact that Rick Barnes went from a 3+ year timeline down the road to, you know, bandaging up a bunch of holes on a sinking ship, and it culminated in a situation that was untenable. So I love Rick Barnes. I am happy he is having success at Tennessee. I hope he turns his trend around of not making the second weekend at Tennessee. But let's pick this conversation back up in April and see if he has taken his highly rated team and ground them into the dirt where they drop out in the second game of the tournament, or if he actually makes it to the Elite Eight and Final Four. Because one of those might show that he's reinvigorated and doing things differently. The other might show you that it is the same thing he was doing at Texas.
So, Tim, fire Shaka Smart? Question mark?
I'm not there yet, no. By any stretch, I will share Johnny's love for Rick. I was rooting for them really hard against Gonzaga. I was that's probably about as engaged and as caring as I've been about a college basketball game that didn't involve Texas for a very long time. So hats off to him. A couple of things. I think Shaka has his work cut out for him still, in that it does not look at this point like we have, or that he has, the type of offensive backcourt player that can really take over games and that you can count on consistently to say, okay, what is this player's baseline? Like, what do we feel like at a minimum we can count on them every single game to do this? And at this point, that baseline for a lot of our backcourt players is pretty damn low. Like, Kerwin can throw in some pretty rough games. Matt has thrown in some pretty rough games. Eli and Courtney are certainly not beyond some of that. And for an offense that requires the type of backcourt play that Shaka has, for all of the good things he's done in recruiting, we don't have that guy. We just simply don't. And so until he figures out how to land that kind of player, particularly if he figures out how to not land a guy named Young instead of a guy named Edwards. You know, I mean, there recruiting decisions abound no matter where you are, no matter what the situation. But look, we have to have that guy. And if Shaka's not here and Rick's stayed, does De'Aaron Fox come?
No.
You know, and if De'Aaron Fox does come, does Quentin Grimes then come? Or how is Shaka going to tip those scales so we get some of those players? And because as much as I love next year's recruiting class right now, we don't have that guy coming in next year either.
Nope.
So it's going to be an interesting ride, because I believe Shaka's a terrific coach. I think if Shaka left this year for, like, took over the South Carolina job for Frank Martin, I would not be surprised if in 3 or 4 years that job, he was destroying shit over there. But it's, you know, we're not there yet. He's got some work to do. He's found a lot of terrific players that would be an awesome 2 through 10 in any lineup. We need that really top level player. And so until he finds that guy, we're going to revisit this question more than I would like to, I'm afraid.
Dil Oskowski sucks. Why do we still play him? Question mark.
Oh, all right. Here we go. So, I mean, I think we sort of addressed that a little bit earlier. I would say it is probably hard for a guy who is a redshirt senior who transferred from one school to another to take over a role, to then relinquish that role in some form or fashion. And I feel like there was, if there was not a conversation with him, there is probably a conversation upcoming with him where they sort of lay out the, hey, you can still really be a part of this team. You can still help with the success of this team. However, we are going to limit your role somewhat because we now have a, you know, 1.25 years of data to show that he has uses. I mean, he's still the best rebounder on the team, for example. He consistently gets more rebounds than guys who are 2 inches taller than him and considerably more athletic. He has a theoretical capacity to hit a three that enables a shot fake that gets him into the lane where he can do damage so that, like, there are plays, there are situations where he brings value. Having said that, the higher upside here is Kabaka Hepa. And it needs, it. I think we're seeing the, I don't know if I would call it ascendance of Hepa so much as the rebalancing of roles that Tim talked about. So I don't think that Osakowski sucks. I think he has value in situations and he needs to be employed in those situations, but he is not the team leader he would hope to be. And I hope he acclimates well to his relatively reduced role.
Well, he was almost anointed from that one, you know, tip-off game his redshirt year on. Like, I mean, the entirety, like, oh, here comes this savior who can hit from three and rebound and do all these things. And so I think that, like, you know, the wide berth he got, even through his struggles last year, was pretty considerable. And look, I won't, you know, without trying to impose myself into the situation, I understand how easy I have it as a coach of a sport like tennis, where it doesn't matter who your parents are, it doesn't matter how much money you have, if you can beat that kid, you're going to play ahead of him or her, right? Like, it doesn't matter. Whoever is best in that sport is going to get that time. It's tougher in basketball. Like, it just simply is. The intangibles of the sport, the leadership pieces of the sport, sticking with someone that you feel like has that talent level to hit the shot when they need it or get the rebound when you need it. And if Shaka, I can't speak to how Shaka feels about either Dylan or Kerwin, but if Shaka came into the season and thought to himself, hey, we've got some studs in Hepa and Hayes, we've got, you know, I feel like Ramey has a chance to be pretty damn good down the line. We know that Coleman has a chance to be very good. But our best basketball is if we can find some way to have both Dylan and Kerwin play meaningful, executing kind of minutes, and we're going to give them every opportunity to do so. And certainly, you can't, if anything, you cannot fault how much Shaka has stuck by Dylan and stuck by him and stuck by him and stuck by him, and it just wasn't working. And those that, you know, that rough minute and a half against VCU, if as rough as I was on Kerwin a few minutes ago, I mean, Dylan, that was just as damning. And so to see that happen, best case scenario for Dylan, this is a kick in the ass and he kind of gets it together and really listens to what the staff is saying. I mean, in my opinion, he's got the best, as far as our assistant coaches. I mean, Horn is the best one in my opinion. And so he's got the benefit of working with him, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there. But yeah, I mean, Dylan sucks, question mark. I don't think he sucks, but I think there's enough film out there that people can kind of say, hey, we can play to his tendencies. We don't have to worry about this. You know, even if he shot fakes, you're going to be fine. We can recover against him. Even if he gets on the move, we can bait him into bad decisions with the basketball. Even if he becomes a volume three-point shooter, more times than not, that means he's going to be a volume misser. And so it's you know, hats. I mean, again, as a leader of young people, I understand why Shaka would stick with these guys as long as he has. I get that. And that would have been our best team. It looks like it's not there. We'll see if the minutes keep on showcasing his willingness to give other guys more run as opposed to his senior leaders.
So last question, Curran Roach can't shoot. Why?
I, I think it's fair to say that Roach can shoot. He needs to have
his feet set under. No, but the question clearly says Curran Roach can't shoot. Why?
Oh, right. My bad. Sorry. My bad. Correct. Why can he not shoot? My mistake. Yeah.
Because he doesn't have the ball.
Yeah, right. I think with Roach, it's, again, and like his limitations are not severe. It's just, you know, coaching in general is sort of a, it's a series of trade-offs. There's costs and benefits to every decision you make, whether it's a roster decision, whether it's a schematic decision. There's never like a perfect answer. And so when you are dealing with a team like this, who has a lot of athleticism, they have a series of guys who are good at some things, not necessarily super great at anything. Like Febres you plant him in the corner for threes. He's going to make them, pretty often. Like he's now got enough of a sample size this year that you can say he's a solid to above average 3-point shooter. His defense is somewhat improving, but you don't want him bringing the ball up against a press, for example. With a guy like Roach, he is the closest thing they have to an individual creator, someone who can make their own shot in an isolation situation, which bestows upon itself certain responsibilities. And when you have a guy like that who is not a point guard, who is the only quote-unquote shot creator, you have to find a way to make that guy the creator and not kill your offense. And so you start putting the ball in his hands as a point guard to say, okay, maybe he can, you know, maybe he can go do something. But if he doesn't do it reliably enough, now it's like, okay, well, let's make an adjustment, bring Matt Coleman in to initiate the offense and try and get that guy in the move. But is he going to do the right thing? Like this is a long way of saying that with Roach, you have to get him shots in certain circumstances. You get him shots on the move, attacking the basket, he's probably going to do pretty well. You get him shots where someone has gotten the defense to sag off him enough that he can get off his three in a sort of set shot situation, he's probably going to do pretty well. But if you get him to try to shoot off balance threes, or if he is trying to create from scratch, his shooting percentage is going to go down. And so it's as much about getting him in the proper situation as it is about his actual ability. And so I don't think it's that he can't shoot. It's that I think he needs to be put in the proper position more often than he has been in some games this year.
Yeah, that's extremely well said. I wouldn't.
All right, next question.
I wouldn't disagree with anything of that. I think to maybe piggyback on that just a touch. So when you think about what Kerwin kind of embodies is this incredible athleticism and this sort of sick ability to just, you know, finish at the rim and all these things. And you see it almost, you think of like a larger than life kind of persona of like how he wants to attack the game and be really fast and be really explosive and kind of be ferocious at the rim with that kind of stuff. And yet when he's at his best in our half court offense, he's solid. He's making good decisions with the basketball. He's passing, down onto the interior when we've got a great look. He's taking open threes in rhythm. He's moving well without the basketball. Like it's sort of like goes against maybe what we think would be true about him because of what we know about his athleticism and his explosiveness, where we would think, oh well, he must be able to do these things. Well, he just really kind of he's pretty limited in some of those pieces. And so when we say he can't shoot, and I think what you mean by that, Will, is why can't he hit some of those spot up threes where he's taking it off the bounce? Why can't he create his own shot in the lane? Well, he just frickin' can't. and if we ask him to do that over and over, then his particular law of averages is going to showcase a guy who's probably going to be 28-29% from three in those looks, and maybe like 32-35% from two in those looks. And so we have to do a better job of saying, we want you to shoot a lot of shots. We want you to get points in here. We have to make it so that you are doing that in a smart, thoughtful way about how our offense is working. And so the more that we can allow him to be in situations where, hey, you being solid is going to equate to a good pass from you to an open, you know, for a dunk for Hayes, or a nice looking shot for you from three, the more we can do that, the better. And we asked him to do some very different things from that for that 3-game losing streak. I thought against Purdue we got him back into that groove a little bit, and we'll see if then he takes some confidence from that, or if that truly is his role moving forward for the next few games, or what. But yeah, if we ask him to hit tough shots kind of in a creative way against a set defense, he ain't about that life. That's not really who he is.
The last question would be, Grand Canyon University, who they, what they do?
So Grand Canyon is run by Thunder Dan Marley, who you might remember if you were old as shit like Tim and I, from the Phoenix Suns. He's got a team that is, there's not a lot of history. They've only been around for like 5 years.
It's an online school.
That's exactly what it is.
I know them through lacrosse, because they came into the league.
Everything he knows through lacrosse.
Shut up. Anyway, they came in through like the last 2 years and like just like came out of nowhere and were really good. And everybody's like, who the hell is this team? I looked them up and I was like, take some online courses through Grand Canyon University and YouTube, Grand Canyon University, blah, 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 some shitty tagline.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, this is their sixth year in KenPom. So I think they've only been in the WAC for about 6 years, which means they've been a D1 for 6 years. And Dan Marley has been the coach for the entire 6 years. So a lot of continuity at Grand Canyon, going to be honest. Really, who they are is, they're not great. Like, they're not bad. They're not great. They're slightly worse than Radford. So, you know, take that as it is. You would hope that a team like...
Are they 4 points worse than Radford?
You would hope that they are a good three-point shooting team, given that Thunder Dan Marley is the coach, but they are not. However, they did give Nevada, who was number six in the country, a scare on Sunday, so maybe don't treat them like they're nothing. I guess the end of the day, they're, you know, it's not a great team. This is a team that if VCU and Radford had been wins, we would not think twice about this game, because they're not great defensively, they're not great offensively. Like, they're not, this should be a game that Texas wins handily in theory. But I think we all deservedly at this point are not going to take anyone for granted at this point, because good Lord, no more taking for granted. That's maybe UT Arlington, but maybe not. Other than that, they're not remarkable. They don't do any one thing remarkably well.
I mean, the one thing that they do well is they're pretty balanced when it comes to point distribution. Their entire team is shooting, I mean, their entire five starting five are shooting around 10 points per game, or hitting 10 points per game. That's something for them. But you should beat a team where when you Google Grand Canyon University, the first result is Grand Canyon University legitimate?
Oh, there you go. They're like DeVry, but D1.
Exactly.
Yeah, not a whole lot to add. I was surprised at how athletic they looked against Nevada, and kind of lengthy even too. Nevada's a tall team, and they can attack you all over the court. I thought Grand Canyon did not look out of place athletically.
They have 3'6" guys. That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, you know, and admittedly, that's the only game I've watched with them. I'll watch the next two, because then they play you and I the next game, I want to say.
Yes.
So we'll take a look. They probably will shit on you and I. We're not very good this year, but as much as any game, you can probably say this for the last few, this game will prove again how much this is about Texas one of the big question marks, or that's not even the right way to put it. One of the big
qualms, concerns. Yeah,
yeah, over Shaka's tenure is
points of pontification.
We do not deal with positive adversity well. For whatever reason, we struggle over and over under Shaka to string good wins together. It just doesn't happen very often. And, you know, to come off that North Carolina and Michigan State game and all of the positive things we should have been feeling and then to lay the two eggs that we did, that's you know, that is very Shaka for the last few years. And so I'll be very interested to see it. It felt like his rotation decisions against Purdue were spot on. His decision to make Matt more of the initiator and creator, particularly more of the penetrator for the team in their tough spots, I thought was spot on. I've been hoping to see that for most of the year. And so we'll find out very quickly whether or not that was a flash in the pan and, okay, now we can, you know, yay, that got us to win against Purdue. Now back to what we've been doing, or this is kind of what we're hoping to build as the new normal. So, like I said, anyone who is going to watch the Grand Canyon game, I would be very shocked if you watch the first 5-10 minutes and don't think to yourself, hey, that team belongs. That team has some talent and skill. So I will be watching very, very eagerly to figure out what exactly our style is moving forward. Are we back to relying on Kerwin in late clock moments, or are we seeing Dylan make some bad decisions and still get a lot of playing time? Or what? Or maybe we'll see Kerwin and Dylan play terrific games. Not that they're certainly incapable of that, but this game, for sure, even as capable as Grand Canyon is going to be all about us, in my opinion.
You know, they're called the Antelopes, and that reminds me that I haven't played Red Dead Redemption 2 for at least an hour now, so we probably should wrap this up. Right, Will?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, but I really, really want to add some more angry internet fan questions, like...
Oh, thank God. I was so close to just like, firing up the Xbox.
Like, I understand why you don't want to fire Shaka Smart, but fire Shaka Smart question mark.
Oh, right, yeah.
Exclamation mark.
Yeah, now that you brought it up a second time, I'm rethinking it.
Yeah.
Oh, but
it's hard not to really see where you're coming from in that standpoint. Well,
yeah, I thought repeating it twice would really get my point across. But you're right, Johnny. I believe that there is such thing as Red Dead Redemption withdrawal. So
yeah, I'm getting the shakes, man.
Yeah, before you start foaming at the mouth, let's go ahead and end it off there. Y'all, thank you for pretending we were football for the past hour. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and I guess Discord at Better White Guy. Discord is still sort of just a thing that's on my phone. So somebody maybe teach me about it.
I'll invite you to channels and whatnot. Anyways.
Yeah, there's some millennial show me what's going on. I don't know what this is.
And Johnny, where can we find Tim? Where in the world is Tim Preston?
So I know we've gotten into some sort of weird corners of things, but mostly when Tim has his free time, like, you know, he does a lot of thunder dunking on old dudes in his 60 plus rec league. But when he's not doing that, he is on Chat Roulette because he is preaching about Jesus. He goes on there. I mean, you know, one, he likes sort of the interaction with new and different people, but also because he feels like nobody is more receptive to the lessons of our Lord than a surprised person with exposed genitals. So he's on there a lot.
What is Chat Roulette? What even is
that? You don't know what Chat Roulette is? Well, Tim, you're in for a surprise.
He clearly knows who Chat Roulette is. I just explained why he's on there. So...
Well, Tim,
there's okay. So you're randomly with naked people,
Tim.
I mean, effectively, yeah, that's sort of what Chat Roulette is. Yes.
Oh
yeah.
Boy, your
but
mind
the,
is
the
about
the chance
open.
That you're going to see a dong is just as good as if you're going to see a hot chick, or
way,
oh, maybe
no,
way it, better.
Yeah, no, it's skewed way in one direction. Go ahead and check it out,
no,
Tim.
Tim, it's going to be fun
yeah,
for
get
you,
on
man.
Chat Roulette.
But
yeah.
Hey, before you do that, Where can we find you on the internet?
On Twitter at Inside Texas Hoop, no S, and at InsideTexas.com. Come hang out with us. We're having a good time.
And you guys can find us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening. We will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.
Johnny, Johnny, Johnny. Not happening. No? Okay, cool.
He's not the fan we are.